Good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm David Taffet here in the studio with Laron Landis and the late Patty Fink. And our guest today is State Representative Victoria Niave. She is
my state rep.
Your state rep.
I'm so excited to have her on.
Thank you.
And she was on student government when Josh was a...
When Josh was still Christopher at the University of Texas at Dallas, we were on student government together.
Ah, okay.
Small world.
So, Victoria represents District 107, which is East Dallas, Garland, Mesquite, which is how Laron gets into that district because he lives in... We won't say the name of the city.
I live in Dallas County.
Yes, he does.
Nice thing.
All right. Yeah. Okay, so Victoria, on election night, you won an upset victory against Kenneth Sheets, who was an incumbent for how many terms, do we know?
Three terms.
Okay, but that's normally an established incumbent. We don't think of Mesquite as being, you know, the bastion of liberal... thinking, although they did pass a non-discrimination ordinance this year, so, you know,
with a lot
that's me saying that, and I'm wrong.
They passed it without a lot of hoopla.
Yeah, exactly. There wasn't nutty people at the...
There were a few. I was there, but yeah, no, that was a great thing. Kudos to the city council. Mm-hmm.
I'm giving entirely the wrong stereotype of Mesquite. But that's the seat that flipped. Now, there were a couple of other seats that flipped where there was an incumbent in 2012, 2014, a Tea Party person won, and 2016, the old incumbent won their seat back. So there was a few of that. But Victoria, your race was the most expensive race in the state, and upset victory. Now, the upset that night, there were a lot of people who were upset. Yours was the good upset.
Right. How do you celebrate for Victoria? Thank God for Victoria.
How did you celebrate that night?
First, let me say how excited I am to be here, and I'm really thankful for the opportunity to be here and talk about some of these issues that we're having in the state legislature this year. But it was really, so we had our watch party at the VA hall, the VFW, right off of White Rock Lake. And we were all excited as we were seeing the numbers come in. And then as the night started to progress, we heard about the possibility of Trump being president. And then after that, you could feel the mood change. You could see it. And so, we were very, very excited when we saw our numbers. But we knew that even now, more than ever, we've got to really, really work hard.
So most depressing victory party ever.
Well, Aaron and I went to Sheriff Lupe Valdez's victory party. It was for her fourth term. And we had kind of a similar mood. I mean, we're like, yes, Lupe's in again. And this is, you know, otherwise pretty bad. But we had some Democratic victories that were very significant, and people who kept their seats and their benches, and that was all great stuff. Great stuff. But then there was the other.
The Republicans in Dallas County who kept their seats are all moderates, like Linda Koop and Jason Villalba. So that's Dallas. That's, you know, you wouldn't have won, I don't think, Victoria, had you been running against somebody a lot more moderate who really tried to represent the whole district.
Yeah, and I think people were sort of fed up with, you know, or tired of some of the politics and the votes there, and just people really came together, and so I just want to give a big shout-out to everybody that volunteered, worked really hard. We had hundreds and hundreds of volunteers, people who donated, I mean, even as little as a dollar donated to our campaign to try to make a difference. So it was not easy. It was very expensive, but we knew that with hard work and just knocking on doors, talking to voters, I think that's the key, and listening to what issues are important to them, that, you know, helped us get over the edge.
Well, since this is your first term, a lot of people still don't know who you are. Can you tell us a bit about your background, how you even got into politics?
Yeah, absolutely. So I was born and raised in Dallas. My dad came as an immigrant from a small town in Mexico, and he came with a sixth grade education and a dream. And so, and I think our that part of our story connects with a lot of people in our community. And so I grew up in the barrio part of Pleasant Grove, so just on the south side of 175, and commuted to Ursuline, all-girls school in a very wealthy part of town. And so that really, really opened up my eyes to the wealth gap in our city. So I got involved in civil rights advocacy at a very, very young age with the LULAC organization. So I was in high school at the time, and then had volunteered on a campaign. Regina Montoya Coggins was running for Congress back in the day.
I worked her campaign too.
And I remember knocking on doors for her and just, you know, volunteered, got some of my girlfriends, and we went to go knock on doors for her. So to me, that was
that little office on Prospect over there in East Dallas.
I remember sort of knocking. I think it was like the Casalinda area over there back in the day. And so, yeah, and that to me was really inspiring to see other women run and challenge. And so things would make me really mad about, you know, laws or things that we would hear in the community. So I figured I have to do something to be able to fight back and advocate. And so I decided to go to law school. And so I met Chris,
awesome.
Josh, back at UTD.
It's okay. He's schizophrenic.
Well, and I was just going to say that Victoria is the reason at UTD we have 24-hour library services.
Oh, I'm glad we have it still.
Yes, we do still have it. And they finally beautified the campus.
I've been recently. It's gorgeous. We had a lot of dirt.
It would be difficult to uglify what that campus used to look like. So
it's beautiful now, yeah.
We fought very hard for green benches. And now it's just beautiful.
Yeah, I'm really glad. And even back then, I mean, we were knocking on doors, talking to students, get them to register to vote. We were doing voter registration drives. So just serving our community has been something that's been a part of who I am.
So, you know, people have suggested to, like, Patty and Aaron that they should run for office. Mm-hmm. Those of us who know them have said, God, no. But how do you take the leap from knocking on doors? Like, I did that when I was in college. We knocked on doors, and we were very successful for McGovern. And when I say we were successful, actually, I lived in Albany, New York, and other than Massachusetts, McGovern also won Albany. Other than that, he didn't do so well, but he did win our city. How do you take that leap? Because I've done that, too. Mm-hmm. How do you take that leap and say, okay, I'm going to run for the State House of Representatives and actually get on the ballot?
One, I think when you've had enough, and I hope that you do, Patty, you and Aaron consider running, because we need more people to run for these. There are so many seats that are left unchallenged, and mm-hmm. so I had enough, and I knew that it was time. I saw the 2015 84th state legislature and some of the things that were coming out of that and the fight, so I thought, you know, we've got to bring change.
And I have to say, in watching, and we've been doing politics, Aaron and I have been doing politics for a very long time, it's not often you see someone work so hard as Victoria has. She started really early. She began talking to voters, coming to them in their neighborhoods, and speaking to them. And the other person I think of is Celia Israel, who, you know, for her special election, did 9 contacts. I mean, that's 9 contacts per voter is a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
and I think that you were campaigning at that level, and it just shows you when you work hard, you can win. And so even though we're a red state, we're not really a red county, but we're a red state. If you work really hard and you talk to voters and you listen to them, you can win in this state.
Yes. And can I give a little story, just since you were talking about mm-hmm. that, like the number of times that we contacted a voter? It was during early voting, and we had gone to a house, and I knocked on the door, and this lady said, I got a call earlier from your office, reminding us to go vote. And I told my husband, she was just talking to her husband right before that. And then I knocked on her door later that evening, asking her, because she had committed to us to go vote, mm-hmm. and reminding her, letting her know where her polling location was. And yeah, we called. By the end of it, I think some of our voters might have been tired of the number of times that we contacted them. But
that's
we're very
why
grateful.
When I was down in Austin on Tuesday for the opening of the legislature, I was in Celia's office. It's packed. I was in and Mary Gonzalez. It was packed. I went into your office. Nobody there.
Oh,
they were just so tired of hearing from you.
At our office? Oh, it was by the end. Yeah,
I know.
We had a really packed house throughout the day. We had people come down from Dallas, so we were really, really excited. So I think you came,
I was at the end. Which was very nice. I'm glad we timed it that way, because we sat down, we were talking a little bit, and I was almost giving up on today's show, because everybody, like Eric Johnson, said, oh, I'm really busy, it's Martin Luther King weekend, I'm going to be up there, but there's just events all weekend. And thank you. You said,
no, thank you for the opportunity.
You said you were going to be here and free. So,
and you had a really special thing happen, too. They drew for the freshman class. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so, and a lot of this is new to me as I was, you know, going. So we had new member orientation. And the way they determine seniority is they draw a ping pong ball. And so it's completely random. And seniority determines sort of you get to pick where you want to be on the house floor. You get to pick your office of whatever's left after, you know, everybody else who had been there forever. And so somehow I like felt it, you know. And another state rep that I was sitting with told me, "You're gonna get number one." And I thought, you know what? I think I might. And of the 21 or 24 new member reps, I drew number one. So I'm the most senior freshman.
Wow.
Of the new members.
There really is hitting a lot.
Yeah. Is that carry over from one session to the other? Okay.
Nice.
So as you're reelected, that really will make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
When you're there. Five terms or 10 terms or 30 terms. Once you're there a few terms, that will make a difference, because there'll be this group and there aren't that many of the larger offices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've got a cool office, and who are you designating with?
So my deskmate is Representative Ramon Romero Jr., and then we have a really fun hallway. We have Rep. Diego Bernal, Cesar Blanco, Marianne Perez, Barbara Gervais Hawkins, and then Rep. Lance Gooden.
Cool.
It's a good hallway. We're right by the cafeteria, so if anybody's in Austin, please swing by and visit.
So are you considered like the leader of the freshmen?
So you can tell we're the Democrats, we're the Republicans, so I would not consider myself. I mean, for me, it's just we're still getting to know each other and sort of finding our niche areas, and so, but I'm the most senior, I could say, if that means anything. Yeah.
I think that's fantastic, especially since it does carry. That's big.
So before we get into some of the things that, like, Speaker of the House Joe Strauss said he was interested in introducing, what did you campaign on? What were some of the issues that you campaigned on and that you heard your constituents telling you that they're concerned about?
So some of the main issues they're very economic-based issues. So bringing more jobs to our community, increasing the minimum wage, getting equal pay for equal work for women. Like, the fact that we do not have that in Texas is absolutely unacceptable. And it's not just women that benefit. It's men and families and children that, you know, when a woman gets paid the same for the same work that a man does, then everybody benefits.
And, you know, here at Canon, when Patty is being paid exactly the same thing that Lauren and I are being paid,
which is zero. Nobody who does a show gets when we're all volunteers.
That's great. And that's a big issue across our state.
So weren't people telling you that they were concerned with where people pee?
No. I did not hear that at the door.
I don't understand. Our lieutenant governor told us that that's important.
And it's very frustrating, because we've got more important issues. People are living in poverty. One in 27 people in our district lives in poverty.
But maybe they wouldn't live in poverty if transgender people peed in a different place. But that's the level that the Senate is taking this session. Mm-hmm. It's that frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe when you talk to people, you come to their home and you knock on the door and you talk to them, maybe they realize that what they have in their home is a unisex restroom.
That's right.
All kinds of people go in there, and it's not just, you know, trans trans women specifically.
You know, I've been saying that for years.
I get that.
When people say to me, can you imagine transgender bathrooms or transgender people going in, and people of different sexes going into the same bathroom? My answer has always been, yeah, I grew up in a house with one of those.
That's a great argument.
You know.
I have one too in my house.
Yeah,
in my house too.
Exactly. Yeah. And you have a daughter.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, you better protect her from, I don't know what.
So staying in there too long. That's what he needs to protect.
People were talking about, say, minimum wage. And that was on the national campaign. That was one of the issues. What were people asking for? Did they have a specific amount, or were they just saying, we have to increase it somehow?
There weren't specific amounts that people were asking for, but with, you know, some of our work with some of the other organizations, like Top the Workers Defense, $15 is something that really, I think, folks would want, could make a big impact, but even at $12 or $10 could make a big difference on people's lives, and so it's just, we've got to start looking and pushing for more equity, because that would why in one of the best states, in the best state in the country, do we have so many people living in poverty
when they're working?
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's what's insane to me, is that people are working so hard. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, the guy that did the Super Size Me films. Lawrence Burlock.
Yes.
He did the 30 days, and he had 30 days where he went through a situation. And the first one he did was to live on minimum wage. Mm-hmm. He and his wife lived on minimum wage for 30 days. And he worked in yard work, and he cut his finger, and it started getting infected. They had no money to go to the hospital and get treated. And it was just, you know, and I think a lot of people don't really realize when a person is living on that or trying to live on that kind of wage, how incredibly difficult it is. And I think we need to have more of that kind of a show to, or exposure of what's really happening out there, because you cannot live on $7.25 a month.
We're about to go to a break, but when we come back, I want to hear from what your constituents, or my fellow constituents, what they had to say about health care.
Absolutely.
And you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink. Our guest is State Representative Victoria Niave. And we'll be back with Victoria and her good buddy here, Josh Chris, in just a moment.
This is Rollins Geller, and I'm listening to Lambda Weekly, 89.3, and darn glad to be doing it.
Welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with late Patty Fink and Laron Landis. Victoria Niave is our guest. She is the new state representative for District 107, which includes parts of East Dallas, Garland, Mesquite, parts of Mesquite. And she is right now videotaping us, because what's better than video on the radio? you wanted to ask about...
The hot topic right now is the possible, well, the likely repeal of Obamacare, a.k.a. the Affordable Care Act. And Texas did not take part of, what is the Medicaid part? So I wanted to see what your constituents had to say about that, or about health care in general. Absolutely. Do they think it's a bad idea for everybody to have health care?
I think people need, sort of going back to Patty's point about people not having access or not being able to afford, Texas is one of the states who did not participate in the full Medicaid, getting our dollars back. So just pretty much we pay out of our checks, money goes to the federal government. We should be getting that money back, because Texas leaders, or Republican leadership, has been putting, in my view, sort of politics before people. We have not even been able to, you know, get those dollars back. And so we need Medicaid expansion is one of the things that we're going to be advocating for. There are other states with Republican leadership or Republican-led legislatures who have talked with the federal government about crafting, like, specific, like, a state-specific plan. But here in Texas, we can't even do that. So, like, it's a matter of, it's something that we absolutely need to address, because in the end, you know, our property taxes go up because we have lots of uncompensated care, for example, at Parkland, that, you know, when we don't pay into that, then property taxes go up. So it's something that impacts everybody, even those with health insurance. So.
But thank goodness for Parkland. You know, you were talking, Patty, about the person who tried to live on minimum wage mm-hmm. and cut himself and was infected and he had no health care. If you live in Dallas County, you do. We have that safety net. In Dallas, over 100 years ago, this city or this county decided we are going to take care of everybody. So we're very lucky.
Yes, and then the costs in the end are very high. Mm-hmm. We could get those dollars back from the federal government to pay for a lot of that. So that's something that's important to the county.
And when Teresa Daniel was on a few weeks ago, she said as a result of the Affordable Care Act, the number of paid stays at Parkland has just zoomed up. And that shows in our property tax, like you said. Why don't people want that?
And if we expanded Medicaid, we would bring in, I think there are studies that show about 46,000 new jobs in the health field just to Dallas County alone. So,
wow.
I mean, that's money. That's like tangible benefits.
Those are good jobs.
Yeah.
And those are our dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Texas didn't set up marketplace exchanges to sell health insurance and individual policies to people. So they have to use the federal exchange. And, you know, of course, not tapping into expansion of Medicaid. And I think it's because, you know, the black guy in the White House. That's what it was about. Abbott and Paxton and all of them, they just sue the federal mm-hmm. government, sue President Obama, and they take pride in that. That's what I love seeing your stuff, Victoria, but to see the others talk about bragging about as if it's some thing on their resume. I sued the president 17 times. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane to me.
What
it's just insane.
What are they going to say now that we have
right.
I'm going to assume. And, you know, just now I said these are good jobs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean that minimum wage jobs are bad jobs or that the people doing them are somehow not. I mean good as far as well-paying jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean by that. Okay, so on Tuesday, the legislature opens, and it's really very wonderful. I've been several times. I love going to the opening of the legislature because there's such friendship going on and good speeches, except from our governor. And Joe Strauss, I love this guy. I don't know, have you actually met him and had a chance to speak to him?
Yes, I've met him, and I'm going to be sitting down having a one-on-one.
Oh, great. What was your impression of him when you met him?
He's got a great reputation. From my understanding, I mean, he's been bringing people together from both sides and sort of helping quash or kill some of the bad bills that,
Now, he said several things in his opening address. First of all, he said, compromise is not a dirty word in this house. I mean, he was clear about it. We're going to compromise. We're going to work both sides of the aisle. We are going to do good legislation. My favorite part was when he was talking about children, and he started off, you thought he was going to go there with Patrick. Because he's talking about how children are one of government's biggest responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
and we have to protect them, and using all of their language. And then he said, therefore, we're going to spend this session talking about education funding, and we're going to fix CPS because no child should be afraid to go home to their parents.
Indeed.
Those were his words.
And for listeners who don't know, Child Protective Services in the state of Texas is dangerous right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It has been dangerous for a while. It's dangerous to children.
Yeah.
There are caseworkers that are so overloaded, these kids can get lost in the system. And if they're in an abusive situation, as wards of the state, who knows? I think children need attention from the legislature.
I really want to say it's not the fault of anybody who works at CPS on any kind of a grassroots level, working with the kids. if you can handle, I don't know how many cases you can handle, but if you can handle 50, they're handling 150. It's that bad.
Mm-hmm. Right, and it's a big, big issue. So I was really glad to hear the speaker say that, and those were issues that we were talking about. Their kids are dying, mm-hmm. and the fact that this has been an issue that the legislature has known about, people have brought up, but just have not addressed, and it's gotten to the point, it's at crisis level. And so, yeah.
Because, once again, it all comes back to, where are you going to pee?
They're distracting.
On the Senate side, that's all they're talking about.
They're distracting from the issues that affect people on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. When they're trying to focus on bathrooms, we've got kids dying, we've got schools with crumbling roofs, we've got kids, teachers who are working two jobs just to make ends meet because the state has not addressed school finance reform, mm-hmm. and the funding of our public schools. So it's very frustrating and makes me mad, and that's why I ran. I hope if there's anybody else out there considering running, please do. But I think one of the special things in our race, and I was glad to hear about the speaker, is that we've got to bring people together. Mm-hmm. So even regardless of party, and in our campaign, I think we were able to do that. We had lots of independents and Republicans backing our campaign as well, because we were talking about these issues. This children, abused and neglected children, that shouldn't be a partisan issue. Mm-hmm. And so.
It's not a partisan issue. It's a House issue, not a Senate issue, or something screwy like that. And then he said we're going to address water issues. That's very serious. The future of the state of Texas depends on our having water to live. Traffic congestion. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's driven in Austin, God, took me almost 5 hours to get home. Most of it's spent in Austin. No, Dallas is not bad. In Austin, they have these highways that start and stop, and so traffic congestion. So water issues, traffic congestion, and then this one should interest you, Patty, mental health.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So was education brought up?
Well, education funding.
Okay, yeah.
Education funding. The legislature doesn't have anything to do with curricula. That's the State Board of Education and other bodies.
Yeah, there was a lawsuit. The Supreme Court just came down with a decision last year and said that our school finance system, even though it was constitutional, it was deeply flawed. And you hear it from the school districts all across the country. They don't have enough funds to be able to carry out the things that they need to do. And so, and in the meantime, we've got, I think everybody wants, we know in our business community, everybody agrees that we want our kids to graduate workforce ready, to, get ready to go to college. We need to be making college more affordable. And so, that's a big, big issue that we've got to address with school finance reform, even if it means a special session. That may not be very popular to say, but it's time that the legislature has kept putting it off. Mm-hmm. So we've got to address it.
Yeah.
Instead of special sessions, say to, write an incredibly and pass an incredibly discriminatory and ludicrous anti-choice bill and try to prohibit any sort of reproductive health care for women in Texas. I mean, that's what we've seen special sessions be in the past, past.
When we had Ken on, who's the state director now of Planned Parenthood, they do more to create babies than to
absolutely
to in quotes destroy life. That's what Planned Parenthood is about. It's about
it's not planned single
planning to be a parent responsibly so that you can anyway. Okay, so there are a whole bunch of anti-gay laws proposed. There's actually more pro-LGBT legislation that's been proposed. So for every anti-bill, there's a pro-bill.
And I don't think they're really as much anti-gay as they are. There are some of them that are. But they're anti-trans. Anti-LGBT.
Oh, there are plenty. There are plenty that are. The anti-trans ones are mostly in the Senate. It has to do with where a transgender person can use the bathroom. Can you explain? Because I can't figure out how it would actually work.
So you're right, that's a bill that's coming from the Senate side. I can tell you that if something like that were to pass, and we have to vigorously fight against that legislation, that would have a real economic benefit, I mean, economic detriment to our state. I mean, we look at what happened in North Carolina and the billions of dollars, the millions of dollars that they lost here. Studies show that Texas would lose over $8 billion. And, you know, for folks who like sports, I know Cowboys are going to be playing today. We can say goodbye to having the Super Bowl in the future in Texas. We can say goodbye to dollars and jobs and conventions here. And so I think that's what people need to realize. Not only is it hateful, it's discriminatory. It is, everybody's going to suffer the impact of that.
Not only that, you know, listening to some of the law enforcement from North Carolina, they even say it's a pointless bill because it's not a bill that can be put into action. You mean it's
how do you enforce it?
How do you enforce it? You know.
Okay.
So if the Texas bill is crafted any way similar to the North Carolina bill, it's unenforceable.
So the law says, or the bill says, that you have to use the bathroom on your birth certificate.
It says that you have to, I think it has to be consistent with your gender identity. I can pull it up real quick, but whatever's on your birth certificate.
And how do you police that?
Okay, and what if you've had your birth certificate changed legally?
See, I think that's going to be an issue, too.
And do they understand this? Do they understand the trans men who have transitioned and once they're on testosterone, grow beards, get bald, develop muscles, and a lot of trans men, I'm generalizing, I'm not stereotyping, but a lot of trans men, I'm a man for the first time, I'm going to work out like a man does. And do women want them in their bathrooms? I'm not getting exactly what it is that we're going to accomplish here.
Well, I think we do need to put it out there for those who have an issue with it, you know, from the public who's listening, because the other side wants to craft this as a biological man with a penis, with a big burly man who can just say, oh, I'm trans and I can go into the women's restroom. That's not what this is about.
That's what they're painting.
That's what they're painting.
Will there be bathroom police? How are we doing this? You know, they have to enforce the law. How do you enforce this?
Exactly. You can't.
I know. It's so frustrating.
You know, when Dan Patrick talks about this, I've heard him say, well, this isn't really about transgender people. This is, I like transgender people. I'm not discriminating against transgender people.
They like him. I've heard lots of transgender people say that.
Right. So he's framing this in a way to say that if a city like the city of Dallas has a non-discrimination ordinance that the city of Dallas has had for 15 years and never an issue, that protects, that says, you know, a trans person in the city of Dallas can use the restroom of their choice. That's fine. He seems to want to say, you know, we're not really attacking them, but any other men, any men who, heterosexual men, one would presume, not necessarily heterosexual or gay, but cisgender men who are perverts, will use this law to go into restroom and say, "Hi, you can't prosecute me," and that's just crap. That's the biggest lie ever.
It is.
Right now, lewd conduct in a public restroom has laws against it.
Period.
And strong penalties. And a person going into a restroom to pee, who pees, washes their hands, we hope, and leaves, has not committed a crime simply by being there and washing their hands, hopefully. And I wish there was a law against the people who leave without washing their hands.
Victoria,
that's not it.
If you hear anything about when the debate on this one is, I need to be there.
Absolutely.
Let me know.
I will. We're going to be posting things throughout our campaign social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat at Victoria for Texas, and on Facebook as well.
Hopefully it doesn't get a hearing in the House at all, but in the Senate it will. I need to be at that hearing because, you know.
Even the committee hearings, it might come up in a committee hearing.
The committee hearing. Where you have your experts coming to speak about these people.
I just want to make a quick point about SB6, though. If they were really wanting to get after those lewd conduct people and the actual perverts, mm-hmm. who are not the trans, the trans people are fine. Trans people have not been presumed to be criminals. But these people who Patrick thinks are, then why would you craft the bill with just Section 5 of his own bill? SB6 has a Section 5, and all it talks about is increasing the penalties against crimes all the way from, you know, transmitting, like, child pornography. If you do it inside a public facility, then you get a big enhancement on your penalty, like a bigger sentence, all the way to murder. Mm-hmm. So if any of these lists of crimes in Section 5 are committed in a public facility, like a restroom or a shower or a locker room, then you get an increased penalty. If you were really serious about preventing crimes in bathrooms, then it would only be Section 5. That's all it would be. If you commit a crime in a public facility, you get an increased penalty.
Has there been a study of crimes in bathrooms that you know of?
Not to my knowledge.
Yeah, because it hasn't happened. Just real quick, we need to take a break in less than a minute. Several of the bills are designed to take local control away. In other words, to prevent cities from having non-discrimination ordinances and protecting who they want to protect. And, you know, Dallas has this ordinance. We don't care what Midland does. We want to protect who we want to protect. They can protect who they want to protect. How dangerous are these types of bills?
It's very dangerous, and there's been a Senate bill filed on that issue as well to try to mm-hmm. prevent a city from being able to pass those laws. And so we've got to, it's sort of an all fronts attack, so we've got to be ready for those.
Mm-hmm. Good. And just one thing about the bathroom bill again. Texas Association of Business, one of the most conservative organizations in the state, has come out strongly against. Their statement when they came out against was, we are going to spend whatever it takes to defeat this. So
it's an insane bill.
Yeah, yeah. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON-FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Lauren Landis and the late Patty Fink, and our guest is State Representative Victoria Niefi.
Hi, this is Valetta Lill, and I listen to Lambda Weekly. I hope that you will, too.
And this is Lambda Weekly. Our guest is State Representative. I need to put your title, The Honorable. Have you been called The Honorable yet?
I don't know.
Oh, well, the Honorable Victoria Niefi. And this Sunday, Saturday, which day is the Women's
Saturday.
March? It's Saturday here, is the Women's March in Austin. There's the Women's March in Washington, and then there are going to be women's marches around the country in most state capitals. Tell us a little bit about it. You're helping organize.
Yes, we're helping organize, and we're so excited. We're organizing a Dallas Women's March rally and megaphone bank. So we're starting at 10 a.m. this Saturday, and it's in solidarity with the other women's marches at Dallas City Hall at 10 a.m., and then we're going to march to the CWA Hall on Washington, and we're going to have a big rally there. We have lots of speakers lined up.
That's a long walk.
It's about a mile point something, 1.5.
City Hall to Lemon Avenue is only a mile?
It's short. This is a historic year. Not that long far.
You can take DART.
But yeah, and if folks don't want to march, they can wait for us at the CWA Hall. But that's where we'll be having the speeches and just a big rally. And then we're going to be converting our energy into direct action. And so we're going to have a megaphone bank. We're going to be calling voters, women voters, to, one, thank them for voting if they hadn't voted. Or, you know, we want to keep them engaged in the political process and find out what issues are important to them. So we're going to have a kids' corner. And we're also going to be asking for anybody who's coming to bring donations for the New Beginnings Center. It's a women's domestic violence center in Garland, Texas. So they need everything from tampons, toiletries,
basics.
Women. Yeah, the basics.
Can
women
march also?
Anything like that? Yes, absolutely. We're an all-inclusive march. Anybody
awesome.
Who is...
But what about transgender women?
Anybody.
And where will
anybody
they pee?
And everybody.
At the CWA Hall.
CWA Hall.
And at City Hall.
Okay.
Yes. So we're very excited. We've got some great partners: Planned Parenthood, the Dallas AFL-CIO, the Dallas County Democratic Party, Moms Demand Action, Women Organizing, Women Democrats, just a long list of organizations. So anybody who's interested, please go to our Facebook, Facebook.com/Victoria for Texas, and we have more details there as well.
So anybody can come. It's called the Women's March. Women are organizing it, but men can come. Bring your kids. Bring anybody you want to bring. And that's in conjunction with the National March, which is the day after the inauguration.
Yes.
Aaron and I were going to go to the one in Washington, but we kind of rethought that when all of these bills began to get filed. And so we have an opportunity to meet and talk with other LGBT activists while we're in Austin, and we think we'll have a bigger impact by going to the one in Austin.
So there's the Women's March in Dallas, the National Women's March, and then in Austin. Do you have the details of where it's going to be exactly, where to meet if you want to go to Austin?
It's going to begin at noon on the grounds of the State Capitol building, and it's in a different kind of way. This is different for marches. We're going to begin at the Capitol and march down Congress Avenue the other direction.
So you'll be turning your backs on the Capitol.
Yes.
Yes. That might be a good way to do it.
So what are some of the issues with all these marches that are female or women focused? What are some of the individual issues that you are highlighting?
So it's everything from education to standing up to a president or presidential nominee who attacked women repeatedly throughout their campaign. And so we're fighting back because we don't want to, and we will not allow sexism or hate or discrimination. We don't want that to become the norm. And as we hear, so we've got to fight back against that, because now we're hearing it trickle down to kids, and you know, them feeling that it's okay to say certain things about women, or I mean, that's absolutely unacceptable. So
I spoke at a high school to a GSA, a Gay Straight Alliance, right after the election. Those kids were throughout the program we had, and they were just talking about all of the anti-gay, anti-Hispanic, anti-black, anti-everything that they were hearing from other people in school. Where do they get it from?
They feel empowered. A lot of people feel empowered by Trump being the president. They feel that it's okay now to, you know, say things like that are discriminatory, and so that it's a pushback, it's a fight back against that.
It's a license to express discrimination, and there is a freedom of speech, but when you start attacking those around you based on ignorant, narrow-minded stereotypes of bigotry as your expression of, I mean, it's random too. People will roll a window down in a car and yell something filthy at a person of color, at a disabled person, at an LGBT person, at a woman.
And
they think it's okay. It's okay because the president does it. Mm-hmm. The president said it's okay. Yeah. You know, that's insane. I cannot believe we've come to this in our country. It's
scary.
It is.
And we need to march.
Somebody would love, anybody who, you know, if you can't make it down to Austin, please come to our Dallas.
Well, if you can't make it to Washington, come to Austin. If you can't come to Austin, come to Dallas. Is Fort Worth doing something similar?
I know there's something in Denton, and so I'm not sure about Fort Worth.
Okay, so people in Tarrant County, feel free to come.
Yeah, please come.
Or to Dallas, okay, so Joe Strauss, who's the Speaker of the House, laid out the issues that he would like this session to be about. And he was very clear, in this House, we're going to talk about substantive issues. And the governor was there at the time while he was saying this. The governor, that speech, could you believe that speech that he made? He was talking in platitudes. Texas is Texas, and we need to be, because we're Texas, for 10 minutes. He didn't mention one single policy. To his credit, he didn't mention bathroom bills either. Unbelievable. But Joe Strauss said, this is what we're going to talk about in this session. What's your impression of how he's going to steer the legislature, or don't you want to say yet? And I'll say what I think it's going to be.
How he's going to steer the legislature to substantive issues. These, and it's not that he's closed-minded, it's that if other important things come up, things come up.
Well, I think we as Democrats, you know, showing a united front and working with him to block a lot of the bills, and I think you have to build alliances with Democrats and Republicans mm-hmm. to stop a lot of these. And I think we do have lots of moderate Republicans who understand the impact of bills like that. It's just this sort of ultra right-wing faction of some state reps there who brought up on the first day an amendment.
Okay, that was the second day. I wasn't there for that
one.
Explain what that one was. It was a
housekeeping bill, right?
Yes. So
it was a housekeeping bill, and this was an amendment brought up by Tyler Republican Matt Schaefer.
Yes.
So what did he propose?
So on our second day, when we all were there for the first time to start voting, we're supposed to just have simple votes, straightforward votes on housekeeping for the Texas House. Representative Schaefer filed an amendment to the House rules on the bathroom issues on the very, well, I guess the second day of our session, the first day that we're going to be voting on stuff. We already have this bathroom debate and discussion.
A bathroom debate for the Capitol.
For the, yes, for the Capitol, for our House rules, just to like the normal housekeeping. And so, yeah, that was very interesting to see. I think you could see just lots of folks, lots of the Republicans were concerned about being forced to have a bill on that, mm-hmm. a vote on that issue. And I'll share just a little inside thing that I learned while mm-hmm. I was on the floor. Some of the other state reps were saying is the reason that they tried to file that, one, to force all of the Republicans to a vote so that and later on when the vote, if the vote on Senate Bill 6 came on the floor, you could call them out if they switched positions. And so they didn't want to be locked down. So a lot of the Republicans were really concerned about that from what I saw, and they eventually ended up withdrawing that amendment. Mm-hmm. So there was no vote on it.
Right, right.
But wait, so no vote on
do,
record.
Do you know the
no
reason they record. Wanted it? March, is it March 20th? It's the third Monday in March.
Yes.
Is LGBT Advocacy Day. If that bill is in place, then transgender people cannot come to the Capitol to lobby their own representatives, to talk to their representatives, because they won't be able to use a bathroom in the building. You can't go that long.
But it got withdrawn.
No, I know, but I'm saying, why did they really want it? That's one of the reasons, because they don't want those people coming to talk to them. You know, as Debbie Riddle said last session, I think it was Debbie Riddle, and she's gone. What she said when people from the LGBT community from her district came into her office, she said, don't waste my time and don't waste my staff's time. Leave.
Oh, wow.
These are citizens. I mean, she was a representative, a Tea Party representative from New Braunfels, and to turn away constituents.
You know,
this is
it's
crazy.
Your office to use. It's not your office. It belongs to all of us.
Yeah, I don't see it as our. I don't see it as mine. I see it as our office. Mm-hmm. So anybody, regardless of, you know, what party or what issue that they're coming to speak on, I think it's our responsibility to have a door open to anybody.
So here, at least listen.
Here's what I think is going to happen. This is my prediction for the legislature. As it gets to the end of the legislative session, they have to end on a certain time, specific, it's in the Constitution, all of the statutory type bills, and then after that, it's all budget. So I think Joe Strauss, who's the person who sets the agenda, is going to put his issues first, and things like education funding isn't going to be easy, but even if everybody agreed, it wouldn't be easy. It really is a tough issue. Mm-hmm. He's going to set all of these things up there. The bathroom bills go to the back of the line, and when they die, last time they died because they died in a lot of committees, and the committees he put them in, there were a lot of Democrats even who chaired those committees, and his excuse was, I tried, but the Democrats blocked us. This time he can't use that, so he's going to say, I told you what the agenda is here, and let's get these things done. That bill goes behind these. He's already said that. First day, he laid it out.
And I hope that there will be a rally of representatives, not just from the Democratic Party, but certainly unanimously from the Democratic Party, and other moderates who are on the Republican side, who will help to block these bills. Because I know in my Senate district, my senator ran unopposed, and that's going to change in 2018. You know, I mean, this has got to change. We've got to have some people that step up. But he filed a bill in the Senate that basically says that, I know it's targeting gay people, and specifically gay Texans who consider or want to get married, or who are married. It's a bill that says that if a federal law contradicts the first article of the Texas Constitution, then Texas doesn't have to follow it. And one of the things in Article 1 is Section 32, which says, that only one man and one woman can get married, because that was the amendment that was shoved in there in 2005. Mm-hmm. And I know that's what he wants. He's going to say, well, Texas doesn't have to have any sort of marriage equality because it's against our Constitution. Mm-hmm. And it's not going to fly. It would never fly. But this is the kind of stuff.
But it'll put a real interruption into a lot of people's lives.
Oh, sure. Right. Absolutely. Right. And it's going to cost money and time and attention and treasure to fight this stuff. Mm-hmm. We do this every cycle. Mm-hmm. We have to put everything on the line to stop some really bad crap that would never survive a court challenge. Never survive it. But we're going to spend taxpayer dollars, mm-hmm. Because they hate us.
It's okay, so with some of these issues that are important, education funding, CPS, mm-hmm. have you even had a chance yet to talk to any other people about what it is that is being proposed?
Yes, on some of these issues. So the education funding is a really, really big piece, because in 2011, the state legislature cut more than $5.4 billion from our public schools. $5.4 billion.
Wow. And you know what? Not one single kid under the age of 18 voted against any of the people who voted that way.
I mean, with that amount of money, it sounds like a bunch of schools would have to close.
A lot of them were impacted, mm-hmm. and the state put some of the money back but hasn't fully restored the funding. And in the meantime, our population has continued to grow, and mm-hmm. they want this move towards vouchers. And so now there's this whole A through F grading system mm-hmm. that a lot of the school districts are against, because it sort of puts a stigma on schools. And
it was just one school that's rated as one of the top high schools in the country, I forget which one it is getting a B or a C, something like that, from the state. And it has,
It's really all a move to brand these schools so that they then have an argument that our schools are failing, so that they then have a better argument to push their vouchers, which would take money away from our public schools. So we have to fight against those.
So maybe you'll get some good help from Trump's education secretary. The one who's been fighting against public education her whole life and donated a
billionaire.
It's really concerning, all of these things. That's why your votes really do matter. And Patty's right. We need people to run all across the state. And I just want to put in a little plug, because if you are interested in running, please contact the Texas Democratic Party. Mm-hmm. Cliff Walker is the person that you need to talk to let him know that you're interested. Whether it's a city council race, a school board race, all across the state, if you're interested and you believe even progressive values, please contact Cliff.
And if you're LGBT, please do that, and then also contact the Victory Fund. The Victory Fund has an amazing training to help you understand and navigate your campaign as an openly out LGBT person, and how to deal with that, and how to talk about issues that are not about your sexual orientation or gender identity. And so that's something that's really, really important to get as well. And I hope that more LGBT people in the state of Texas will run for office.
And women. We only have 29 out of 150 of the House members are women. Only 29 out of 150.
Wow.
That's unacceptable.
How many senators?
On the Senate side, just a handful, I think. And so, mm-hmm. We're regressing. We need more women to run.
That's a lot. A lot of white guys. A lot of all white guys.
Yeah. I saw a lot of them when we were down there.
In both chambers.
I saw a bunch of them when I was down there. Can you stick around for a few minutes?
Yes, absolutely.
Because the next show isn't here yet. So in a minute, we're going to just take a break for top of the hour, and we'll just keep talking a little bit.
Well, I wanted to go back to the issue of, you said that there's a bill to pass or prevent cities from protecting or passing their own non-discrimination ordinances. Mm-hmm. I thought that was already deemed unconstitutional.
So there's a specific bill, and I'll have to check and see who exactly filed
because
it.
Because didn't that happen in Colorado?
It did.
And that went to the Supreme Court, and they said that's unconstitutional.
It's Prop 2.
Yeah, so how is Texas trying to do this?
So it's Senate Bill 92 by Senator Hall. They're trying to prohibit any local authority from providing non-discrimination protections, not otherwise provided in the state law, and repeal any existing local protections that are broader than state law. So,
And you know what else that will do? It'll kill off building codes. It'll kill off the smoking ordinance in the city of Dallas. There are a lot of things I think that there are unintended consequences if they just say, if it's not in state law, you can't have a law about it.
You know, who else would...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
There's a lot more that it'll insinuate into our lives that'll just say, you know, well, yeah, you can build your building right up to the edge of your property line. And,
you know, who else it'll impact? It's not just the LGBT community, but we protect veterans in Dallas. That's not protected statewide.
Yep.
So those horrible veterans are, you know, they need to stop demanding these special rights.
Yeah.
So basically the Texas proposed law is saying, we set it here, no city can go above it.
Yes.
Right. Gotcha.
Hold on just a second. We're going to take our top of the hour break.
You're listening to KMON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
And I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with Ron Landis and the late Patty Fink from Lambda Weekly. We're waiting for the next show to get here. They haven't called, and when they don't call, they're usually here in just a few minutes. But our guest is Victoria Niave.
Yes.
And I had it right the whole first half of the show, and...
You've fallen apart, David.
I have. We're just talking a little bit about getting into the legislative session. How did you feel your first week in the legislature? Did it just kind of feel like, oh, wow?
Yes. It was very exciting, and mm-hmm. just walking through the hallways, being on the House floor, and just sort of looking at the big frames with the pictures of all the previous state mm-hmm. legislators, and so from the early 1900s, and so, and you can see that we've come a long way, but we've got to go a lot further. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of work to do, and so.
And I love that those pictures, it's a composite picture of every person in the legislature, mm-hmm. and it's the first one is taken when early 1900s, or does it even go back to the 1800s? But they're old, like, You know what old pictures look like. Well, the new ones, they continue to do them in that style, so you're going to look very old. You're going to look like your grandmother.
The sepia or whatever it is.
The sepia tone pictures, yeah. Right. But those are very awe-inspiring. I love going through those, and, oh, there's Harriet Earhart, and, oh, you know, somebody else.
I have an ancestor who served.
Do you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, early 1900s, or late 1800s, from the Hill Country, and I don't know his name, but I'm gonna find out. But there's, you know.
Well, next time you go down, and you have to take a picture of
yeah.
it, because you know there's something just very wonderful about that. I love the dome of the Capitol with all of the governors, and they just hung Rick Perry's, and so George moved over one, and Anne moved over one, and they move them. It starts at the bottom, and it's kind of spiral up to the top, and they're kind of running out of spaces for the ones on top to move into. But,
well, Victoria, are you the first in your family to not only go to law school, but to venture into politics?
Yes, first in my family to graduate college also.
Oh, awesome, yeah. Awesome.
And I just want people to know that it doesn't matter where you came from, doesn't matter what neighborhood you grew up in, that we need folks to serve, and so just keep going and don't let anything stop you.
Mm-hmm. Well, your story is important that it can be done.
Absolutely.
That's something that it can be done. So I think a lot of people who, comes from a neighborhood like Pleasant Grove. My ex is from Pleasant Grove. Or one of my exes from Pleasant Grove. So I know about the, not Danny. So I know about the neighborhood. It would think, you know what, I don't even have a chance. I can never achieve something like that. Well, you're proof that it can be done.
Thank you so much.
So that's awesome.
Your family must be just giddy with pride.
I know,
with pride.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Yeah, it is. And I'm just ready to work hard and serve and, you know, want folks to stay engaged and don't just vote every 2 years, every 4 years. Vote in all the local elections as well. So.
That's really where the rubber meets the road.
Absolutely.
The more local you get, we see you guys as an election judge. I see these people come out of the woodwork to vote in presidential years, and then we never see them come back to the polls the rest of the time. And those are really the most important ones that affect your lives. You know, and if we roll back city ordinances kind of things, then we're going to see, well, your fence can be, I guess, as tall as it wants to be. that's affecting your neighbors, you know.
Yeah, I'm always surprised when I hear about somebody winning a city council seat or a school board seat with less than 1,000 votes.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, so nice. You're right, Patty. People just don't show up for that kind of stuff.
I want to thank State Representative Victoria Niave. Niave. And
thank you so much.
Coming
this is exciting.
We expect at least once this procession, but come back more often.
Absolutely.
Come back sometime this summer after the session and tell us what kind of nutcases these are.
I'll be coming back almost every weekend.
Okay, good.
Good. To do stuff here in our community.
Good. So, where is your district office? Do you know yet?
We don't have it confirmed yet, but it's going to be in Mesquite off of Galloway. So as soon as we get that, we will share that. But in the meantime,
very close to my house.
Oh, awesome. Well, come visit. VictoriaForTexas.com is our website. You can also find our contact information on the Texas Legislature's website.
And so, next week, our guests are Bone Major.
It is.
We're the first couple who tried to get married and got arrested for it.
Yes.
Right. Should be a lot of fun.
And
they got married last week. You're not going to be here?
I'm not going to be here. I'm going to be marching in Austin.
That's right. Okay. Victoria, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Patty, do a lot of good marching. I'll see you next week, Lauren.
Thanks, y'all.